Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come talk to y'all today and give a Mid-South perspective on double crop soybeans. And you're probably going to hear some of the same things that Doug just presented. I've got some of the same issues, and we've got some that, you know, vary across different regions, but I think overall we all kind of deal with some of the same problems and conditions. But if you look at the Mid-South Delta or the lower Mississippi Delta, usually consists of Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, the Boot Hill, Missouri. The Boot Hill is a little bit different than northern Missouri, so we kind of lump it in, and then West Tennessee. Diverse row crop production. We've got known for our rice and cotton in that area. Cotton's kind of taken a downturn the last several years, and so a lot of that production has gone into corn and soybeans. But we still have quite a bit of cotton in that area, and still have quite a bit of rice. If you look at that general area, you're about 14 million acres of planted crops, and again, it's diverse. I mean, not only do we have rice and cotton, we've got peanuts, we've got grain sorghum. It's kind of taken the decline the last several years. Doug mentioned the sugarcane aphid. We've been battling it, and it's a pretty nasty pest, and it really causes some problems in our grain sorghum. We are starting to pick up some peanuts, then there's other diverse melons and some vegetables and other commodities kind of grown in that area. Soybean yields we can't stay competitive, and the reason we can stay competitive is because supplemental irrigation. In Arkansas, about 85% of our production, soybean production, is irrigated, so quite a bit of irrigation goes on. So if you look at the trends in double crop in that particular area, the percentage of planted acres in double crop soybeans has declined in the 80s, and I think not only in the Mid-South, but also if you look at the entire nation. Back several years ago, there was about 16% of the soybean acreage was double crop, but in the last, especially the last 5 years, that's really declined quite a bit. Several factors influenced that, and I'll discuss a little bit about those, but weather, commodity prices, not only wheat prices, but also I think a big driver in the decline in double crop soybeans has been soybean prices, and then input cost. So I just kind of pulled out Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee. I know, central and eastern Tennessee has a little bit of double crop or wheat production, but a big part of it is in the western side of Tennessee. You can kind of see from the 2013 to 2017, if I can get my pointer to work, for Arkansas, in 2013, we were about 16% planted in double crop. This past year, we were 3%. So we've had a significant decrease in double crop acreage planted. If you look at Louisiana, in 2013, about 19% was double crop. But the last 2 years, there wasn't enough acreage to even register, on USDA. Mississippi, similar, about 17% in 2013. This past year, 1%. Tennessee is still staying, pretty consistent in the upper 20% on double crop, but they are probably a little bit more unique compared to, the west side of the Mississippi River. There's a lot more rolling hills and a lot more non-irrigated, and so I think the acreage in Tennessee has kind of been maintained a little bit compared to some of the other crops or other states. And so if you look at the wheat planted acreage in Arkansas since 1997 to 2016, you can see we were not quite up to the Kansas, levels, but, we were about 1.2 million acres of planted wheat in the state back in the early 2000s. Prices kind of started declining. Soybean prices started to increase, and so the amount of wheat planted in the state started to decline. Especially over the last 5 to 6 years, we've been, kind of under that, right at a 500,000, if not a little bit less. This past year, we were somewhere around 200,000 acres of planted wheat in Arkansas. As I mentioned, a big driver for the decrease in double crop planting of soybeans has been commodity prices. You can see the wheat prices have declined over the last several years. But, in contrast, the soybean prices have really, increased, especially back, 5-6 years ago when we got up to about $14 soybeans. you know, that there was a big driver on reducing the amount of wheat planted, just because we can make more money with our full season soybean than we could with our double crop soybean acreage. So a few things I'm just going to kind of hit on, and the most of this information has not been, you know, really updated in the last 10 years. We have done dabbled a little bit in seeding rates and planting dates and looking at varieties and maturity groups, but you know, if you look at fertility and insect control, you know, there's really not a whole lot that really changes compared to our full season versus our double crop planting. But we're going to talk about stubble management, maturity group selection, some research in the past several years talking about it, planting date, row spacing, soil fertility, and then talk about some of our pest control problems we've been facing in the mid-south. Stubble management, we're probably a little bit more unique compared to some of the other regions of the U.S. We still have a number of farmers, if they do grow wheat, they tend to want to burn that stubble after wheat harvest. A couple of things. Number one is just to get rid of the residue. They like to till in the mid-south. We are starting to see a shift toward more cover crops and more no-till production practices. So I think this practice is kind of being phased out. A lot of our rice acreage is burned after rice harvest. And just in the last month, EPA and some environmental people have really gotten kind of bent out of shape over, you know, how much pollution and smoke and ash and things like that is being released into the atmosphere with these burning of the fields. So some of our rice agronomists have met with some of the local officials trying to look at different burn bans and things like that, and try to look at practices to try to move away from, you know, burning this residue. I really don't like see, you know, fields going up, because I just see money going up in that smoke and ash, you know, because you're losing some nutrients and organic matter and other things like that. And it's a struggle in the mid-south just to kind of build that organic matter. So anytime we're doing any kind of a burning of our fields, it's just, you know, I just kind of cringe a little bit. But once we burn, usually the producers go out there and till that ground. And as we already heard, you know, the earlier we can get our soybeans planted, the better our yields are going to be. Well, this burning and tillage operations kind of delay us, you know, at least 2 to 3 days in our planting operations. And so if we can, you know, kind of go back to a more no-till or reduced till practices, we can actually get in, plant a little bit earlier and conserve, you know, some of that moisture that we see. As I mentioned, we are looking at, you know, some no-till practices, reduced till, trying to get a little bit better, and trying to get away from looking at this stubble management by burning. Maturity groups, just like Doug had mentioned, we've done a little bit of work on looking at maturity groups and looking at when we need to plant those. We really don't need to look at a too early maturity group, because we get short plants with the conditions we have in the Midwest, and with short plants, that equals low yield. We don't want to go with too late a maturity group, because if we can go too late, planted that late, we're not going to be able to finish out the pods before we get a freeze or a frost and cause some yield loss that way. So this is some work that Dr. Larry Purcell did in a regional project that was funded by USB and the Mid-South Soybean Board, looking at different maturity groups, and they looked at different latitudes and different planting dates. Historically, for our double crop production, we've always pushed our late, our fives, or maturity group five varieties, and that's been the case for the last 20 years. You know, we've always said if you're going double crop, you need to plant a group five. The main reason is it seems those group fives tended to kind of withstand some of the late season stresses with the droughts and the droughty conditions and our higher temperatures we have later in the season. But when we started looking at Larry's data, it kind of surprised us that the maturity group fours actually even planted out in our typical double crop planting window, the 1st of June to the middle of June. Our group fours actually outperformed any of the other maturity groups that we looked at, their threes, fives, and sixes. And so our rural location is our most southern, southeast location. It's on about the same latitude as Greenville, Mississippi, kind of, you know, in the southeastern corner of the state. Kaiser is our northeast research station. It's up close to the Boot Hill of Missouri. And even up in the you know, a little bit further north, our group fours are still outperforming our group threes or group fives and our group sixes. So we've really kind of had to change up our late season planning, including our double crop planning, and kind of shifting more to our group fours versus, you know, our group fives, where historically we've been in our group fives.
Jeremy, can you separate the late fours and early fours with that? Do you think late fours?
Yeah. So the question was, can we separate our early fours versus our late fours? And our late fours tend to be a little bit better. So that's historically is, you know, probably anything later than a 4-5. And a lot of our guys go a 4-8 or a 4-9. They were. It was irrigated data, correct. And I'll get the, I don't know if I've got that somewhere, I think, in there, but talking about irrigation. So planning, you know, anything we can do to try to get a good seed to the soil contact. Again, you know, a lot of our guys do conventional tills, so we typically have a good soil to seed contact, but we tend to lose, you know, our soil moisture late in the season. So, you know, we're trying to shift more to that no-till system to try to maintain some of that soil moisture. Seeding rates, as Doug mentioned, our typical seeding rate is somewhere on normal conditions. We shoot for around 140,000, 150,000 seed per acre. In our double crop system, we always tend to see a little bit better yields by bumping that 10 to 15%. And again, more seeds per acre. You're not going to get as big as soybeans planted that late in the season. You want to get more surface area so you can capture more of the solar radiation. So, therefore, we're looking at trying to get a little bit higher seeding rate out there. We're also looking at row spacing. I've done quite a bit of row spacing work. Row spacing, anything less than 30 inches, is we've not seen anything statistically significant in yield as long as it's less than 30. Arkansas and the Delta is kind of unique that, you know, we have row spacings all the way from 7.5 inch, you know, drills all the way up to 40 inch planters over in the Mississippi side of the Mississippi River. And that's typically in the cotton. So, you know, when I'm looking at row spacing research, you know, I have to have, you know, a number of different pieces of equipment just to try to encompass, you know, and encompass all the different row spacings that we have. So we typically kind of look at a drill and then a 15-inch row spacing and then 30s and then 38s is about, you know, typical what we usually look at. But in the research we've looked at, 20-inch row spacing, maximize yield. You don't see a whole lot of 20-inch, but, you know, somewhere in that narrow row spacing. 10-inch row spacing, we did have some limitations on water. Less vegetative growth and branching, and again, we need that narrow row spacing to close up those canopies. So, number one, the narrow row spacing, we increase our light interception. Number two, we increase our irrigation efficiency. We do not recommend growing a double crop soybean in the Mid-South unless you've got irrigation. It's because it gets so hot and dry in that June, July, and August time frame that, you know, if you try to grow a double crop soybean feed or crop, during that time, it would just, you know, burn up and you just wouldn't have any decent growth. So irrigation. And then the next thing on the narrowing up our row spacing is weed competition. And I'll talk a little bit more about weed competition here in a minute. But those are the three main driving factors for trying to narrow up that row spacing. Soil fertility, and this is one of the things that really hasn't changed much over the last several years, but we still tried to look at, you know, soil fertility and stay on top of soil fertility. Anything we can do to prevent any kind of nutrient limitation and yield. And so we recommend soil sampling at least every 3 years, taking a good soil test and then using those recommendations. Timing of application, especially in a double crop rotation, has always kind of been some question mark. You know, do we need to fertilize in front of our wheat crop and put out enough nutrients to kind of get us through the soybean crop? Or do we need to kind of split up? Do we need to look at the fertility in front of our wheat crop versus looking at the fertility in front of our soybean crop? And so Dr. Nathan Slayton's our soil fertility specialist, did some work a couple of years ago looking at fall applied versus spring applied, especially P and K in a double crop wheat situation. And really the take home message is it really doesn't matter when you put out your fertility. As long as you put out the adequate amount for both the wheat and the soybean crop, you can either put it out in the fall in one application, or you can split it. But yield-wise on the soybeans, we really didn't see an impact in yield by looking at either a one-time application or a split application, as long as we had the adequate amount out there. Some of the work I've been working on the last couple of years has actually been looking at inoculants. This is some data from 2015. We had a couple of different locations. We've been looking at inoculants for years and really didn't see much of an impact. And mainly we were looking at April planted. We were trying to maximize yield to see if, you know, the inoculants were really going to impact maximizing the soybean yield. About ready to give up on that. And we saw we had a late planted test, and we started seeing some potential differences in a planting date effect with our inoculants. And so this is a June planted, and if you look at our planting, our test, April planted, we didn't see, April, May planted, we didn't see any impact with impact on yield with the use of inoculants. If you go out to a June planting date, we're seeing somewhere between a 6 to 7 bushel increase in yield just with the addition of an inoculant. And if you move out to a July planting date, that jumps up to about a 10 to 12 bushel increase in yield with inoculant. Now, we have significantly decreased yields as we delay planting. So we have better yields in our May planting versus our July planting, but the yield difference between the use of inoculant and untreated is greater in those July planting dates. And so the past couple of years, we've really been focusing on this. We've actually went out and had on-farm replicated strip trials with and without inoculant to try to, you know, see if we're going to see the same results on a large scale versus our small plot stuff. Had a few of those harvested so far and coming in, and we are seeing some differences with the use of inoculant. Not as great as that we've seen with the small plot stuff, but we are seeing, you know, somewhere between a 4 to 5 bushel increase in yield with the use of inoculants. So again, looks like we're going to probably be really pushing those inoculants in the future. So on all inoculants, we looked at several different products. The seed treatments performed better than the dry hopper box formulations, but we couldn't separate those out statistically. But again, later planted, especially in our double crop situation, I think that's really going to be a big benefit, and we're going to see an increase in yield, especially in our double crop or our late planted soybeans. Weed control has probably been the biggest driving factor the last several years, and probably the hottest topic. Anything we can use to control weeds in the wheat crop is going to benefit our soybean crop. Our biggest weed that we fight in our soybeans coming in, you know, coming out of wheat is mare's tail or horseweed. A lot of the mare's tail we have is glyphosate resistant, so if you go back into a Roundup Ready system, you're not going to be able to control those. And a lot of the farmers, if they let the mare's tail go in their wheat, they really don't see much of a yield impact with it in their wheat. But as they go through and combine their wheat, it cuts the tops of the mare's tail off, and then they look like big Christmas trees, you know, once you get your wheat or your soybeans planted. So mare's tail has been a big issue, especially in the cotton top cotton areas, glyphosate, PPO, resistant Palmer amaranth, and that's been our number one driving force. And so there are some herbicides that tend to, you know, kind of keep the Palmer amaranth at bay in our wheat. But, you know, that's probably the two biggest things we had to deal with weed-wise. But we always recommend a pre-emerge. A lot of guys use that burning process to burn the wheat residue to get rid of some of the weed pressure. But a good residual pre-emerge herbicide, we always recommend that. And then in our post options, as I mentioned, a lot of the Palmer amaranth that we have in the state is not only glyphosate but also PPO resistant. We've kind of switched to the LibriLink system last several years. Some guys are switching to the Xtend formulations and the Xtend system, but if you want to talk about Arkansas and the Xtend, I'll be more glad to talk to you about that later. But we've had our own issues, but the Xtend system, it seems like it works well. It worked well this year, but with the volatility issue that we've seen with those products, it's going to be a challenge to keep that particular chemistry in the fields. Insect management and pest management is probably the biggest probably cost in double crop systems in the Mid-South. Pretty much you might as well budget in 2 to 3 applications of an insecticide in the Mid-South. Bean leaf beetles, three-cornered alfalfa hoppers, this in the past couple of years, Louisiana has been fighting this pest for a couple of years, but Arkansas got its taste of red-banded stink bug this past year. It's a different beast compared to the other stink bugs. We're having to apply insecticides all the way out to right before the combine rolls through the field to control this particular pest. It does affect the seed quality and will affect or attack pretty much mature soybeans and cause damage to those soybeans. And so our entomologist has been working around soybeans for several years, and this is the first time I really saw him nervous about a particular pest this past year. So we're still working with it, and hopefully if we have a decent winter, it'll kind of push it back a little bit further to the south. Been a lot of push, you know, just to put out these automatic sprays, but, you know, we've done quite a bit of research looking at using our thresholds versus automatic sprays, and we're still seeing a benefit by using the IPM, and, you know, procedure, using thresholds, and then applying the right product at the right time, you know, for those particular pests. We're not seeing much of a benefit with these automatic sprays that some of the companies are really pushing. Disease-wise, increased pressure, we see that in late planted beans, especially on our double crop. Might as well budget in at least one fungicide application. We did see soybean rust this year. It did come in late enough that it's not going to have much of an economic yield impact. But we every year we fight pod and stem blight. Cercospora leaf blight is becoming a bigger issue any given year. Anthracnose, depending on the humidity and what kind of rainfall we have, aerial web blight can be a problem, especially in our rice rotation. Rice sheath blight and aerial web blight are the same common pathogen. And so if you're coming into a soybean crop after a rice rotation, sometimes aerial web blight can be a problem. But intense scouting also, you know, in our disease and our insects, we have quite a bit of scouts that walk the fields late in the season to determine, you know, if we are having some problems in those fields. Want to kind of throw some economics. If you don't know, Arkansas has a program called the Verification Program. It's been in effect since 1983. We keep up with economic impacts and look at economics at the end of the year. This is just looking at the double crop irrigated research verification fields that we've had since 84. Most years you can see we do have a profit with double crop. Every once in a while you'll have a particular year where you will lose some money in our double crop production practices. But we had, you know, you can see early in the cycle, anywhere from 4 to 5, 7 fields. Just in the last few years, we struggle to find farmers that want to do double crop soybeans. So we haven't had that many double crop soybean fields in the verification program the last couple of years. There are opportunities to increase the double crop, also opportunities for research and advantages and constraints. Doug showed where most of the soybeans and the wheat is grown, a similar slide, but you can see where it circled is the Mid-South, where we typically have, you know, our production. But opportunities, I think we are, as David indicated, I think we are probably going to potentially lose some double crop to cover crops. A big push in Arkansas and the Mid-South has been on cover crops, so we may lose a little bit more to that. You can see value combined in each of the crops, improved cash flow, added market value opportunities, improved labor and equipment. You're kind of using more of your equipment over a longer period of time. But some of the constraints and concerns, decreased yield, and that's the main driver, I think. We're not seeing as many double crop acres as we have in the past. Increased disease and insect pressure, we're increasing our budget and using more money. Drought pressure, irrigation needs, especially in the Mid-South, we're starting to have some constraints on our irrigation capabilities. And so not only are we losing the quality, we're also losing the quantity of our water. So in review, double crop soybeans, excellent yield potential if the wheat is harvested in a timely manner. We are looking at some of the research and some of the same treatments that the Mid-Atlantic and the Kansas are looking at, trying to harvest a higher moisture wheat, trying to get in a few days earlier, I think just a few days earlier, and getting soybeans planted, we'll see a benefit and increase in yields. But as I mentioned, research recommendations, are most of them are over 10 years old, but we are evaluating those and trying to find some commonalities with other states and working with other states to try to answer some of these questions. So a lot in common with other regions. We do have, you know, specific problems and concerns in, you know, in the Mid-South, but you know, I think overall, if you just look at soybean production, we all deal with the same thing. And you know, soybean production from Atlantic to Mid-South to the, you know, plains really doesn't change that much. You may have a few minor issues to deal with, but overall, it's practically the same. So,
all right.